The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily representative of the Coalition or of any other entity. This content is intended for mature audiences only.
Hello everyone, and welcome to Throw Down Your Questions, episode 155. I'm your host, Tony Polanco, and tonight I'm joined by Emilio Lopez.
Sunday, baby.
Carlos Romero.
Yo.
And Brett Murdoch.
Hola.
Alright, so Adam is going to join us a little bit later. He's watching WWF. Chris is sick, and Brian, he's missing for whatever reason.
Can we just start coming up with a new and ridiculous, like, overly British excuse of why Brian needs to be gone every time he's gone?
I would just say he was one of the Kingsmen.
He got summoned by the Queen. Yeah, he got summoned
by the Queen.
All right, I don't think dudes can actually hear me right now on OBS because, like, you guys here in Google Hangouts, you can hear me because, you know, we're on this thing, but on OBS, apparently they can't hear me, so give me a second here. Obviously, I don't know when I'm muted myself or not because I don't have a fucking second screen.
Get a goddamn second screen!
Dude, I would get a second screen, but the problem is I don't have enough room on my desk to fit a second screen. I could afford to buy one right now, but I would have absolutely no space to actually put the shit in. But let me fix this shit. Give me a second.
He has one of those
late 90s, early 2000s, like one monitor desks.
No, you know? That's what I'm saying. Like this is essentially the adolescence of owning a PC. You're it's the kind of the growing pains. Like you got things started. And now you're like, oh man, I'm gonna need another table. I'm gonna need a bigger monitor. Maybe this will become my second monitor and get myself a gaming mouse.
All right, these dudes that are watching us live, you're going to see the sausage being made, so I got to pull up my screen in order to fix this shit. So give me a second. Manny, go ahead and vamp.
Yo. So, the beginnings of
there we PC. Go. My fucking yeah, I mean, God. I'm sorry about Tony, that, people. Yeah.
I just can't believe some of the shit that you just said. I mean, yeah. That's just
really racist shit.
Yeah, I know, man. You were just going off. I mean, realize that we're on air, right?
Yeah, everybody right. Yeah, for whatever, by the way, people, I'm sorry about that. For whatever reason, fucking OBS was not picking up my microphone. I had to manually, come on, man, it's always something. Now you can hear me. Okay, so as I said before, Adam will be here later, Chris is sick, and Brian is saving the Queen. How's that, Brett?
Saving the Queen.
I like it. I think it just needs to be different every time.
Yes.
There's been a critical biscuit shortage in Britain, and Brian has been called out of reserve.
he's secretly a biscuit.
No. He's secretly a fucking
Shinatsky almost choked me. He said I was like a NeoGAF poster. He couldn't hear me. Oh man.
Oh.
All right, man. Let's get okay. Again, apologize for that. Like Brett was saying, like, yeah, it's like you can't buy one thing without buying another. It's like I could buy another monitor right now. I just know where the fuck I'm going to put this in because I have this little ass table. So I need to buy a bigger table in order to get another monitor.
You know? I mean,
you can actually get wall mounts for your monitor, Tony.
I'm not
doing that. It actually extends about 2 feet out.
I can't do that because I live in projects. I can't be drilling holes
into shit. I mean, we said this before. The projects, like where Tony lives, the walls are just made of like cheese. Like, seriously, like, you can't hang anything inside of those things without it fucking falling out.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just whatever cement, cheap, shitty cement that they made those damn things out of, it just doesn't hold anything to the walls.
Yeah, so I can't be doing it. I, even though I'm personally against wall mounting anyway, but I can't do it even if I wanted to, you know?
Mm-hmm.
All right, man.
That'll turn into a big thing, too. You're going to have to, like, probably... I've seen your background not change in years. I know for a fact eventually you're going to have to be like, I'm going to have to just move some shit around and like accommodate, buy some new furniture. Like it's going to be a whole big fucking ordeal.
You know, the funny thing is that Tony really doesn't. You see, like, if you look behind him, there's a chair that sits there. Really, he has no real furniture other than a.
I don't need furniture. I legit do not need furniture. I sit in my chair
all day. No sitting furniture.
The only reason I have that chair there is in case anybody comes over. But really, it's just for me to put extra shit. You know,
I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about like a shelf desk setup. Here's the deal. The bed is probably like one of the most important, but also one of the least important things about the room. Like, eventually you're going to get to be the point where, like, dude, I spend 90% of my day either in front of a screen, in front of a computer, or in front of a gaming console. And you'll be like, I mean, I'm just going to build myself, like, a sweet little fucking gaming nook that, like, just the gaming press, like, they just be, like, you know, drop down keyboard.
You need an alternate room. It's plain and simple. You just need an alternate room.
Yeah, and that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. Yeah.
No, dude, I mean, you guys have seen my little office, right?
Oh yeah, yours is like you're on the opposite side of your living room. So like your living room is behind you.
Oh sweet, we got a little taste of Brett's crib right now. Hold on, Brett, give us a tour, man.
No, I'm just saying, like here's my you know, I just kind of sweep around here. I got my workspace right over here, and then I got into my Cintiq over here.
I can't have my Cintiq. I can't have my Cintiq that far away from my computer. I have to at least have it in the somewhat of the same vicinity.
It's I can touch both screens at the same time.
But yeah, like I'm not gonna get too into it, but I pretty much perfected my room layout about 3 or 4 years ago. Like this is finally the perfect layout for me. I just need a new desk and I'll be straight, you know. But again, I didn't consider the fact that I would need two monitors in the future, you know. But I already did my measurements and all that, so it'll.
Motherfucker, I told you. What do you mean you didn't consider? I told you.
Yeah, but I didn't consider it when I was first doing this, like before I even met you, before I even knew you existed. I never considered that.
No. But when you bought that PC, tell me I didn't say you're going to get a second
monitor. Yeah. You did. Yeah.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
Yeah. I just need another table, you know. Anyway, man, I think we're stalling for time here. So let's get to the first question. And it's a doozy, man. I moved this up the queue. I'm like, no, we're answering this shit first. This is crazy. And as a matter of fact, this is one of those weird things. Nobody asked us about this. I had to prod you guys to ask me about this shit. All right. So this is from Mark/Framework/Apex/whatever he's calling himself today.
Brett Soapbox, right?
Yeah. No, that's hashling it. Okay. Question is, NeoGAF is dead. Evilore allegedly sexually assaulted some girl. All the mods left, and there was mass account suicide. What are your thoughts on the whole situation and previous cover-ups of allegations against Evilore? Okay, Brett, before you go off, let me just explain the situation to people, right? So yesterday, on Saturday, a bunch of people just started, like, purposely saying shit on NeoGAF to get themselves, kicked out, right? Apparently what happened is it was found out that Evilore, I don't have his real name in front of me, he was accused of sexually harassing a woman. Another one of these people that goes out there, rails against gamers and shit, says, oh yeah, you know, women are great, blah, blah, blah. He turns out to be an asshole, just like Josh Whedon, just like Devin Faraci, just like, Harry Knowles, just like Harvey Weinstein. This same type of mentality, right? Holier than thou type of dude goes out there talking about, you know, virtue signaling, basically turns out he's a fucking dickhead. Now, nobody wants to be associated with NeoGAF. And now, when they started putting up a bunch of posts on NeoGAF about this, they all got deleted. Now, if you go to NeoGAF, nothing there. The site is effectively dead. And what I find funny about this is, because I distinctly remember having this conversation about this with Brett many times about this guy being a fucking asshole. Now it's exposed to everyone. So I'm like, this is another Harvey Weinstein thing. Everybody knew about Harvey Weinstein being a dickhead, but nobody said anything. It was an open secret. Bam, this shit's out in the open now. So Brett, hit us with some facts, man. Go off.
They didn't tell me. Nobody told me about this, and they kept this from me in the free pre-show because they just wanted to drop this on me. And the first thing I'm gonna say is that I called it, motherfuckers. I called it. I told you. It's always the fucking same thing. And Tony's absolutely right. It is always these same motherfuckers who want to run and wave these goddamn flags and be seen. Throwing themselves out there for the cause. Like, look, if you are doing it to be seen, you're doing it for all the wrong reasons. And there's so much to unpack here that I'm trying not to overwhelm myself, but here's the basic gist of what I want to get across to people. And a lot of this sounds overly simplistic, but here's the thing. Women are people. They have feelings, they have emotions, they have agency, they are equal to men. Everybody is people. Everybody, some of us, there are some stupid people, there are some rude people, there are some asshole people, but at the end of the day, everybody is people and deserve to be treated like so. The problem and the great irony of all of this is that by going out of your way, and this was Rachel's big thing, by going out of your way to stand up, to shield yourself, or to champion this cause, it steals the agency of the person you're doing it from. You are effectively telling them, I do not feel like you can fend for yourself. There is a huge difference between supporting somebody and championing their cause for them. Essentially what most of these people are doing is saying, sit down, little lady, I'm going to go ahead and take this from here, which is a fucked up thing to say. And then when people get ridiculously confused when these same people are shown not to have a whole lot of respect for the people that they assume to be championing. No shit, because they didn't give them the agency or the basic benefit of the doubt to think that they might be able to take care of this shit themselves. You know, you can offer help, you can lend help. You don't need to wave the flag around for every little fucking thing. And it becomes an issue of the lady doth protest too much. And that is an old fucking saying. That is an old fucking saying. Just to give you guys an idea of how long this kind of shit has been happening. But we seem to be losing this common sense and ability to fucking recognize that, because we all live in this weird echo chamber where we can validate whatever bullshit opinion we think that we have. And this is a good time to point out to people again, objective evidence plus anecdotal evidence is one of the keys to being more objective in a situation. I don't care if you've read that everybody on the planet is fucking blue and somebody cited a perfectly credible resource. You need to ask the questions, and if Chris were here, he would be telling you this. You need to ask the questions about who's funding this kind of thing. What kind of answers are they looking for? How is this information being interpreted, and who is doing the interpreting? Because there is a lot of facts out there, and there is a lot of ways to abuse facts for misinformation. It is a new form of lying that has come about. But okay, I'm just somebody else, please say something. I need a minute. I'm getting beklempt.
Yeah, again, I'm not surprised by any of this, because you had already told me this shit. So when this came out, I'm like, why is everybody going crazy? I thought everybody knew this shit, you know, but whatever. But again, it's always the same people, right? The same people that are virtue signaling out to high hell that always get exposed. It makes me think that the reason they're doing that shit is because, you know, they're trying to hide something, right? And I'm not going to say any names right now, but the day, you know what, Tony, stop myself right now. Manny, you know what I was going to say? I'll stop myself right now. Mm-hmm. If you want to say, you go right ahead, but
no, I'm not saying anything about that, but
but I will say this though, and I don't give a fuck if this is unprofessional. I am taking this shit personal. I'm taking this very personal, because you guys remember a couple episodes ago what fucking Neil Gaff did to me, right? So seeing this shit happen, basically a side imploding, I'm fucking loving it. It's like these motherfuckers, the shit they did to me, they've done to a bunch of people, right? Dragged them through the mud, witch hunts, false accusations, you know.
It's new McCarthyism.
Yeah, it is. It's
insane fucking shit. Okay, let me put this to some people in a little less abstract sense. And now, Tony, I'm going to use you as an example here.
Go for it.
Would you feel like it was if I just came out to visit and I made a big show being like, whoa, 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 hold on a second. There are not enough elevators or ramps here for my friend Tony. No, he needs this shit. We are not paying enough attention to people like my friend. We are not paying enough attention to this group of people. And you're like, no, man, it's cool. I'm like, no, I got this. We need to get more ramps. We need to get more of this shit. We need to make you feel more excluded from the general population because it makes you feel special. And you're like sitting there and be like, Would you be happy about me doing this, or would you think that I'm a self-congratulatory asshole?
That situation has happened to me so many times during my fucking life. Some asshole, you know, speaking for me, I'm like, bitch, I can speak for myself. Do you see me getting my feathers ruffled? If I'm not worried about it, you shouldn't be getting fucking worried about it. You know,
the one thing that would always happen when me and Tony would go somewhere, which is really weird, they would start talking to me like I
couldn't, like I don't
Tony
yeah
couldn't like Tony couldn't talk for himself. I'm like, listen, I don't know shit about this. This is all Tony. You should be talking to him.
Yo, yeah, that happens to me all the time. Yeah, like basically I'm not a human being. You know, they'll overlook me. But yeah, but that extends to everything. It's like, you know, I hate it mostly when white people do this too, where it's like, I'm going to be your guardian. I'm going to, you know, speak for you. It's like, you are showing that person that you're speaking for that you disrespect them because you're not letting them speak for yourself. You know, I don't understand how they don't see this shit, what they're doing. You know, it's fucking insane. You know, by the way, I'm not going to name any names here, but I did find it interesting because there's like certain levels to this type of shit, right? Like, Manny, you and I would go to places, I would start talking, then they talk to you, right?
Yeah.
This happened to me, but in reverse. I was with I'm not going to name any names, but it was a friend who was a girl, right? Mm-hmm. It was for her. The guy talked to me the entire time. Like, isn't that interesting? You know, yeah, and I kept going, bro, my man, it's for her, it's my her. But he kept talking to me the whole time, you know? So it's like, you know, people are fucked up, man. But yeah, anyway, going back to Neil Gaff, personally speaking, I am loving this shit. I'm glad that place is. And the funny thing is, 2 months ago, I had no problems with Neil Gaff. I would actually go there to check out some news and shit. Now, after what they did to me, fuck that shit, because I know I'm not the only one that had to suffer that shit. You know what?
Neil Gaff always had that stupid stranglehold where you had to post shit on there, right? Wasn't that them? That's them, right? No, if it wasn't, you had to get verified. If it wasn't a certain amount of how high the level was, you wouldn't get hits. We were playing that fucking game.
No, we weren't. You're talking about N4G.
N4G, okay.
Another place that needs to go.
Anyway, Neil Gaff was the worst. Sorry about that. Yeah, but still, those guys, like, you know, I never checked that site before because I just, number one, it's just, everybody talks about venomous places. That one was like the center.
But the thing with Neil Gaff is they all played up like they were all, you know, they all acted like they were social justice warriors over there. Every last one of them. They all loved She Who Shall Not Be Named over there.
You're not getting the group of people wrong. It was pretty much the home base of the extremists of that side. Like, yes. I'm sure that there were people in there who are less extreme. I'm sure there are probably reasonable people in there too, but just as every movement seems to squat on a page, you know, for example, a lot of the Gamergate movement tended to flock towards a particular subreddit. I think it was Kotaku in Action.
Yeah. Which is still around, by the way.
No, it absolutely still is. And it still deals with a lot of Gamergate related issues, although it's lost a little of its focus, but I'm not going to talk shit. I'm just saying that idealistic groups tend to land on certain forums on certain pages. And so this was a bastion of the extreme left, you could even say the toxic left. So it's good that this got shut down. I would question whether or not people will actually learn from this because the reason it became this place was because it did all these witch hunts. It did all these brigadings. It made itself an echo chamber, and it tolerated toxic behavior as long as it fell in line with the groupthink. And no matter what you feel, no matter how justified you are, you could go on a campaign about we don't strangle puppies, and you still can't shut down the conversation that much. If somebody stands up and says, I have a very good argument for why we should be strangling puppies, you need to be like, all right, well, I'm pretty sure this is going to be a whole bunch of bullshit, but let's fucking hear it. Like, and you need to have an open discussion, because a conversation goes two ways, and being heard makes people more receptive to listen. It is not just an issue about he who screams loudest. And that was the game that Neil Gaff was playing. And it's a game that everybody fucking ultimately loses. And unfortunately, as we're seeing, the assholes rise to the top of that game because they're going to protest the loudest so that they seem the best. Everybody knows the fucking dirtbag from high school or something like that that was totally friend zone, like hanging out with all the girls and be like the shoulder to cry on. So he could be like a sleazy fucking dickbag. We all know one of those guys. It's not like they're this weird amalgamous idea that we've never run into. We've run into the people who take advantage of situations by trying to pretend that they're the opposite thing of what they are. So it's not that weird to see it here. But the big thing about this is, I'm kind of talking in circles, so I'll finish here, is that this was kind of a main hub of where a lot of this toxic behavior came from, at least from this specific group. There are even people on the Gamergate side who are extremist assholes, and Gamergate is quick to say they do not speak for us. So I will give the same benefit to some of the people on the left and say, like, I'm not saying your entire standpoint is wrong. I'm not saying some of the things that you're saying aren't correct, but I am saying that sites like NeoGAF fostered an unacceptable level of toxicity in their behavior, including doxing and harassing, because they felt they were morally justified. And when you cross that line, no matter how morally justified you actually are, you are no longer morally justified.
Yep, couldn't have said better myself. Carlos, man, get in here. What are your thoughts?
I was a member in NeoGAF. Like, I used to work in the, I used to go to their forums like in the early 2000s, like back in the day. I try to get back like recently, and I got my I couldn't remember my credentials for my account, and then there was like that whole system where you had to, I don't know, like get an invite like to get to the account. So I was like, nah, I'm done with this shit. I'm not gonna try for this. So I was never really into NeoGAF. Even like I wasn't like active in that community. I didn't really read the news. I just followed the Twitter that tweeted out the news.
Yeah, that's what I do. Yeah.
But yeah, it doesn't really matter. You can get your news anywhere else. So it's, to me, it could really, it's nothing really important to me.
And you know, the funny thing is that I think it's hilarious where it's like news is coming from a forum. It's that's information that can't even be, you know, like confirmed. It's like
what's going on, Adam?
Hey, what's up? It's like the Mets sports. Remember IRC and stuff? That's just how it was.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing I want to bring up too. Like, NeoGAF is a relic of an old age, a bygone age now. You know, it's like, hey, Adam, did you catch up on the whole, you know, NeoGAF thing?
I saw that. So is it completely gone or is it just temporarily gone?
For now, it's like you can't access it. It's like you get an error 501 or whatever that shit is, you know, after all this silliness
happened. I'm sure they have it cloned, and even if they didn't want to continue it, somebody else would.
Yeah, who knows? Go ahead, Greg. I'm assuming you want to respond to me saying that gaming forums are like forums in general are dead, which they kind of are. You know?
Can I kind of guess what Brett is going to say?
Go for it.
So, I guess like the replacement of NeoGAF is a much larger place called Reddit.
Oh God,
which Reddit is kind of like NeoGAF to the extreme, just involving everything. Everything is encompassed.
And into Reddit is kind of bullshit too, though, you know?
Yep. Yeah, well, here's the point I want to make where you said it's all bullshit. You're forgetting one thing, Tony, in that we live in a postmodern society in which someone's narrative is just as important or more important than facts, which are, by the way, made by the white scientist.
Of course. The white, evil male white scientist. Cis male
scientist. So you can't trust them. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's cis white science, so we have to go back and reevaluate everything from gravity forward. you're forgetting the fact that to a large group of these people, the idea that my narrative is just as important as the news is something that is very true. So of course they're going to get their news from a forum site and believe what that forum site says over the actual news. And this becomes extra problematic when you then have moderators who are changing the narrative, because then you are changing what is presented as news or the equivalent of news in these people's eyes. It's kind of like what Fox News does.
Okay, man. Yeah, but NeoGAF, don't let the door hit your ass on the way out, man. All right. Let's move on, man. Fuck NeoGAF. All right.
Tony Polanco says.
Hey, listen, I'll say it all day, every day. Fuck NeoGAF, man. All right. next up here, we got Mr. Richard Bailey Jr.
asking Mr. Jr.
a pair of questions. So he goes, what's up, guys? I have two questions I wanted to ask that hopefully weren't asked already. They were not. All right. So the first one is, I think it's safe to say that Horizon Zero Dawn is Sony's breakout PS4 exclusive for 2017. Of all their upcoming 2018 titles that we know about so far, which game do you guys think will be the most successful exclusive of 2018? Will it be Detroit, Spider-Man, God of War, or another title that we know absolutely nothing about? Very good
Spider-Man.
Question.
Spider-Man.
Easily Spider-Man. That's going to be the
biggest. Dude, Spider-Man looks so awesome,
it
though.
It really does, man. I can't fucking wait. Ooh.
Like, it sounds weird because you're like, it's a Spider-Man. It's going to be a movie game kind of. But, like, no, this is. No. This. I think this is the game that fans have been clamoring for. Maybe I'm just adding the hype train too much, but I think everybody is really excited about Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I'm not excited about Spider-Man.
Uh-oh.
What?
I'm gonna say this. I will leave my judgment until the game is out.
Man, you say that about every game, though.
Yeah,
and usually I have a pretty good thing because all we've seen is just some pretty cinematics and maybe some gameplay. I want to see. What's that?
Like the way that you move around the city, I thought that was actually done.
That was one gameplay trailer where it was like he knocks out all those guys, which was like Batman Arkham Asylum, and then he does those little quick time events, and then he swings all around the city trying to catch up to a missile or some shit. I can't remember what he was chasing after a helicopter. There we go.
Yeah, and it looks awesome. I can't wait.
We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll
okay. So that's objectively speaking, that's going to be the biggest one for Sony. Me personally, I'm waiting for that God of War, baby. I can't wait.
God of War. Yeah, God of War is a good backup.
And at the end of the day, after playing Hellblade, I'm even more excited for God of War. You know? Oh man, I can't fucking wait.
I'm actually excited about God of War too. I think they've kind of left the franchise wait long enough that people are wanting the game again, as opposed to being like, oh Jesus, more God of War, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so that's going to be it. Carlos, what do you think, man? What's going to be the big game next year?
It's definitely not going to be Detroit. Anyways, yes.
It's not going to be Detroit. Detroit's going to be a good game, but it's not going to.
Yeah, I don't disagree with anyone about Spider-Man. Well, except Manny, because he still hasn't decided about that game.
Manny hasn't decided about any game, man.
Personally, I think the public zeitgeist, I think that game will be the most popular game. But for me, I haven't passed any judgment on any of the only one that I have passed judgment on is that Days Gone game. I think that game is just meh. We're not talking about my personal idea. I'm just from the way the zeitgeist seems to lean. Something like a Spider-Man will definitely do a better than something like a God of War.
Right. Yeah, I think so too. Especially since this is, like you guys said, this isn't really tied to Homecoming.
But it's using the Homecoming, the fact that there was a Spider-Man movie relatively close to be like a little bit of, you know, jumping off point of it. You know.
Yeah, but I mean, if any Spider-Man game released after 2000 has a movie relatively close to its release. So it's like,
yeah, that's like saying that one of the Arkham games was tied to a Christopher Nolan Batman movie. It wasn't, but they were close to each other, you know? So you can't really say that.
Here's the thing. It's still within the zeitgeist. We just had a Spider-Man movie that just dropped not long, you know, to still keep that momentum. Obviously you want to have release in close to the time frame where people still remember it. You're not going to be like, oh, hey, boom, there's this game.
Wasn't Shadow of Mordor released around one of the Hobbit movies?
Yeah, but it had nothing to do with it. But Manny, the point
is... That's my point.
Yeah, that's the point. It's like, I think you're kind of reaching right there, dude. Like, it's like saying the Batman Arkham games were released to coincide with the Christopher Nolan movies. No, they weren't.
Not saying that they're released to coincide, but the thing is that I feel like there is a time frame after something is within the zeitgeist of things that are out there. You wouldn't release a Guardians of the Galaxy game like 4 years after the Guardians of the Galaxy movie came out. You would want to get it closer to the release of one of the Guardians of the Galaxy, even if it's a year or two off.
But Spider-Man's still a long start the way game? Off. Yeah.
Didn't they start the game before they started the movie?
I think so. Yeah.
Well, but they knew the movie was coming.
Yeah.
But you can't really compare Guardians to Spider-Man because Spider-Man has been in the zeitgeist since forever. The animated series.
Yes, thing is that we had other Spider-Man games that released in that time frame where there wasn't any sort of Spider-Man movies, and those games didn't do that great.
Yeah, but I'm like, what I'm telling you, like, since 2000, we've gotten Spider-Man movies up the wazoo, like,
and Spider-Man games, you know.
Yeah, so like, it's like,
I think there is a fair amount of cohesion that goes within, you know, within the marketing of a game, as well as releasing a game close to the time of a movie. That's what I definitely think.
I don't think we're disagreeing with that. I think the thing that we're saying is that loosely correlated movies are not prey to the same curse that movie tie-in games are.
Yeah. No, yeah, but no, here's the thing. Yes, because, you know, because this game is obviously, it's taking full advantage of its own story. It's not a movie game, but it is a Spider-Man game. And the thing is, that's why we're seeing a new Spider-Man cartoon series on TV.
Yeah.
That's also why we're kind of seeing a Spider-Man game, which is also unrelated to the cartoon or the movie released in the same time.
Yeah,
because people have Spider-Man on the brain.
That's the same amount, you know what I mean? How Arkham went. Remember, they came out with a new animated Batman series. There was a new Batman movie. Like,
exactly.
It wasn't connected directly.
It was in, yeah, but it was in people's brains at the time. And I feel like there's a fair amount of that sort of thought within that sort of thing. It's like, okay, we have this. We want to do the Spider-Man game. Well, maybe we want to keep it close to when the new Homecoming movie came out to kind of take advantage of that.
Miguel says that he's like, you're his boy, but you're hating on Spider-Man right now.
What? I love – how am I hating on Spider-Man?
But you hating on him, man.
No, I've never hated Spider-Man. Fuck, motherfucker, I work on Spider-Man, so go walk out the door.
Come on, man. Calm down, man. They're fans, man.
No, I'm not. Did I sound angry?
Yeah, you sounded pissed, man.
No, man.
Miguel's like one of us, man. Relax.
Motherfucker, I am Spider-Man. No, fair.
Yeah.
No, see, I love Spider-Man. I just think that, you know, in general, when these sorts of situations come along, they obviously want to release them in the close to the time frame of one of the bigger known things to kind of keep that going, to keep the momentum.
All right, let's move on because we're going in circles now.
Yeah, we're
quickly, Dio says that he's like, oh, what about Monster Hunter? Monster Hunter is not a first party Sony game, bro.
Monster Hunter is not a first party. So we're talking like Days Gone, yeah, God of War, Spider Man. What's the other one? Detroit.
Yeah. By the way, so I guess we're all in agreement here. Spider Man is going to be the big selling game. Yeah.
Oh yeah, hell yeah.
All right,
it's fucking Spider Man.
That's what I'm saying. All right. Anyway, let's move on now. Next question. He goes, on the last throwdown, we had a discussion on loot boxes and how this is now becoming a trend in gaming thanks to games like Overwatch that introduced it. What is another gaming trend or practice in gaming that you guys think will become the next major talking point in the industry moving forward? So, you know,
I don't know, but I want to say whatever mobile gaming is doing, that is what the big guys are going to do.
Yeah, that's true.
In general, you got to look at it this way. Those kind of cheap mobile games or even independent games are totally the testing ground for these aspects that people are taking advantage of nowadays. PUBG, what are we seeing? We're seeing the big guys go, oh, wait, let's do that. PUBG's, you know, drop you in the middle of the zone and then have the thing shrink. Is it?
Yeah, PUB isn't a mobile game, though.
No, but the thing is that it's an independent game. I'm saying independent games and mobile games are the space that you're going to see the future of the things that take advantage of us as video game players. Okay. Because they see that it works and it makes so much millions of dollars for these things, then they're going to be like, oh, hey, whoa, hey, let's do that too, you know?
Yeah, right. I honestly don't know. Like, I'm good about
open world. This shit. Open world survival game. Brett.
Yeah.
I can see that. It's
okay. I don't think that's like a microtransaction. Like, I know.
No, I'm not saying microtransaction.
He's talking
about the trends from like independent slash, you know, like, you know,
oh,
like
oh,
gaming,
oh,
you know, gaming yeah. aspects. Like, in other words, those smaller development environments, those smaller type of games created by small studios or those, you know, mobile things, those are like the testing ground. And then once the big guys see that these sorts of things are making millions, they'll be like, oh, well, they'll start adopting that too.
Oh, they already have. What do you think GTA is?
Exactly.
The idea of being able to play your Far Cry type map, but instead of just you having 16 people in there and it'd be an open lobby sandbox, you're going to see more survival elements go into it. But yeah, like half the fun of DayZ or any or Ark or any of those survival games is just the fact that I'm put on a big map that I can roam around, do whatever the fuck I want. And there's 18 other people there that can help or hurt me. I think that is definitely a mechanic that we're going to see brought in. It's going to justify the idea of always online, which is something these companies want anyway. It's going to work really well into their business model, and it's going to give players a constantly changing landscape, which is going to be felt like it's constantly new content, which will then in turn become thematic or viral streaming or sparking Let's Plays and things like that. I mean, it's the same phenomenon that made Minecraft, you know, crazy. The first person who gets to the line with something where like, oh, well, here we built a castle and we had this completely awesome thing happen. And like the first time like PewDiePie has like an emergent narrative game based on this kind of thing. And, you know, everybody's gameplay is different. People are going to take note. It's already happened, like I said, in a few different kind of iterations. GTA or Minecraft have those elements in them, but you combine those together and it'll absolutely happen. The problem is the hardware is too limited to actually be able to do that right now. But and yeah, the money is tied up in console gaming. I mean, PC gaming does well, but console gaming is extremely lucrative. So we need to see consoles get to the point where they can run this kind of game, and then these types of games will be able to be multi-billion dollar, multi-plat kind of things.
And then the moment that they figure out that they can sort of figure out what things that they could monetize off of and take away from people, that'll become the thing that'll become the other type of loot box / downloadable content / whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Are you sick of dying and losing your pickaxe every time you die? Well, if you pay $4.99, you can get a pickaxe that spawns with your character every time you spawn.
Well, Grand Theft Auto kind of already – well, it's not a part of it, but one of the things that Grand Theft Auto does do is the fact that, you know, you get your car blown up and then you have to pay a little bit for insurance to put on there.
Well, so, no. If you have the insurance on it, you never have to pay again. You don't get it back. Okay. If you don't have insurance, you don't get that car back at all. It's a one-time fee. But you don't. That's not real money.
Which is also makes me think. It's like hilarious. You have to have fucking insurance in a video game. This is like get on your car in the game.
Yeah, but it's in-game money, so yeah, whatever.
In-game money.
But I mean, you can create more money by using real money, right?
You can buy that shit.
Yeah, you can use your real money to buy their GTA money.
Yeah, what's going on, Sean Watson?
I want to add something in there too. Once we're done.
No, I mean, I don't have anything to add. Go ahead.
Yeah.
I think we're actually going to see more paid mods, believe it or not. And I don't think you're going to see as much of a thing.
Oh, you cut out. Or was that just
me? Sorry, I was walking through a dead zone. I didn't want to be muted.
Dead zone.
Fallout's Creation Club is a kind of good example. Like, it is essentially just a dressed up mod store, and there are people who are pissed about it, but I also know lots of people who are actually weirdly okay with it. And the reason that I say that I don't think that idea will bomb and that it'll slowly be accepted is, for those of you that are old enough that remember when Xbox Live first launched, they actually advertised the ability for players to be able to create content, to be able to then sell to their peers for points, which then they would be able to then turn around and buy other things created by their peers. So essentially it was going to be a kind of monetized point system where you could create things or play games or buy points or any of these other kinds of things. It was pretty amalgamous. They never actually pinned it down, but one of the things a lot of people got excited about was being able to create content of their own, share it, and either make money to buy, you know, fake money to buy more content, or the possible idea that they could monetize this and make real money, which would open the door for a lot of kind of groundwork, entry-level programmers. And so then you'd see a lot of people making successful mods or successful content for games, and they being pulled into content studios who keep the talent pool constantly fresh and updated. And it was generally seen as a good thing. We've come to a point where that idea sounds pretty terrible, so it's going to be bitter medicine to swallow, but I honestly think, and people are going to hate me for saying this, but I honestly think that if some of the money, or at least a majority of the money, goes to the content creators, that paying somebody for their content and their time is not necessarily a bad thing. I don't want Bethesda to take a giant 50% fucking cut, But it's
fair. You've seen the numbers on that.
I have seen the numbers. I don't agree with the numbers. I don't agree with the numbers. I don't disagree with the concept, and that's what I'm trying to say. I think with some tweaking that the public will actually accept this idea because, you know, it means more content for them. And what this would really require is for them to get around the pitfalls. And this is one of the things about mods on like PlayStation Fallout is there are less of them, but they're all kind of verified. So your system isn't going to crash. Your system isn't going to become unstable. You could almost be quite a bit more reckless than you would when installing mods on PC. Sure, you have less options, but they're more curated, which is essentially the draw for a console to begin with. So I think that if they monetized a player-made mod system, some of the money would go to making sure that this program or this code wasn't sloppy or rewriting the code so it doesn't interfere with the other parts of the game. Part of it would go to quality assurance. Like, I would expect that this would be tested. If Bethesda is getting money for this, I expect them to earn some fucking money. And while I mm-hmm. think it would be a rocky road, if we're talking about long-term things, I all the parts are in place for people to actually enjoy the idea of paid mods. It's just a very bitter pill that we're going to have to swallow. But at the end of the day, if you really, really think about it, if you really enjoy making content for games, you could start to get paid for it. If you're really interested in it as a hobby and you make a really cool mod in high school, you could put it up and find it makes a few hundred dollars. That could spark your interest in game design and bring up more talented people. We could make scholarships off of that. I mean, this kind of thing could honestly revolutionize the game industry and perform or reward a behavior that we've seen in certain companies like Valve at one point that generally is good for all gamers. So it would be on one end, yes, paying for a lot of DLC. On the other hand, it would probably be very small transactions, microtransactions, if you will, but in a less terrible and evil way because you are then paying small people for their time and money. And so it kind of becomes a small-scale economy as opposed to this whole trickle-down bullshit. And that just generally works better. You find a way to monetize the lower end of users and then let them build awesome stuff, and they will. I mean, people will do awesome mods just straight for nothing. If they could find a way to quit their day job, if their mods were good enough, you've created an incentive to now get constant great content infused into the market. So it's a hard sell, but I believe it's something that's going to eventually happen.
Yeah. All right, let's move on here to my man, GMegaForce123. So his first question is, if people dislike it when a series becomes too popular, why do they still love Mario? People said when a franchise becomes popular, it has become dumbed down to appeal to the LCD, lowest common denominator, and it sells out on what made it good in the first place. Mario has been one of gaming's most popular franchises since Super Mario Brothers on NES, and the franchise has only gotten monumentally more popular since then. Now people are hyping up Odyssey like it's a second coming, and he also capitalized S and C on that one. And yet they still say it's a problem if a series becomes too popular. All right, we need to break this down a little bit. Okay, mm-hmm. No one has ever said that about Mario. Like, was Mario ever a hardcore series that became dumbed down? No, Mario was accessible since day one, and it's always
I was going to say it started dumbed down.
Yeah.
I mean, in the most offensive way possible.
Yeah.
The first one still had a fair amount of challenge to them.
Mario's always been popular to begin with. It's not like
it didn't
pull a Metallica to become more popular, you know what I mean? Like, no. So I don't think, here's the thing, I know what he's trying to get at is like, oh yeah, this series used to be this way and then it changed, but it's like that doesn't apply to Mario.
But the thing is that also the other thing about Mario is that they always kind of reinvent the wheel each time. Well, granted, this one is like almost like a sequel to Mario Galaxy, but in general they kind of keep them, you know, they keep changing it up.
They've always been more evolution, you know? Yeah. Well, compare them to their peers. Like, I know Mario was not an easy game, but when you compare it to games like Ghosts and Ghouls or Castlevania or Metroid.
It was never that hard.
No, it was always the easiest game of the bunch, the most accessible game on the system. The game somebody could come over, sit down, never played Nintendo before, you could put it in their hand, and be like, this is kind of cool. That has always been Mario.
Yes.
So it hasn't really strayed from its roots. It's just kind of evolved to fit new hardware standards. It went 3D, but it's still a very accessible, fun, light game that's meant to offend nobody and be this kind of like happy dreamscape. Like it's mm-hmm. never changed.
Can we break down the second part of this? Actually, the first part, because maybe I'm missing out on something. Has there been a big cry from gamers saying, "Oh, this franchise is too popular now; it sucks"?
No, I'm thinking he's not saying Mario in general. I think he's saying
what franchises would actually fit that bill?
Assassin's Creed.
Really? Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
What do you mean? Come on! They got better. The first one was shit. You know.
After Assassin's Creed 2.
So you think it got dumbed down?
I think it getting started. Yeah, definitely got dumbed down. The places weren't as big as the other ones.
Yeah, you used to be able to approach an assassination mission from several different ways and have several different strategies. Every iteration of the game, they cut down on your accessible options until
Adam, go ahead, man.
In the original Assassin's Creed,
Manny, let Adam go. Shit.
Because in Black Flag, all the assassination missions, I used the Berserker Dart. I didn't do anything, and I went from a distance. So if they were like, "Oh, you have to go and climb this and climb that," nope, I went and did it. He went crazy. Everybody else attacked him and killed him, and I walked away. So that was a variant. I didn't have to do anything.
Yeah, so you start to follow a very linear path through all of those forts. And if you strayed from that path,
I didn't even get into the fort. Nope, there were some parts where I didn't even get to the fort. I climbed a tree, and then from the tree, I could see him walking around in the fort. Didn't have to go in. Didn't have to do any of that sneaking and stuff. Nope, no stuff here.
Yeah, I mean that's still better than the first Assassin's Creed, where literally I did every mission. I just ran up to the guy, stabbed him in the stomach, ran up, hid, and that was it. I'm like, I didn't have to do anything.
I think the thing is that in general, what happened is like, but in the original Assassin's Creed, they did give you a lot of freedom as to what you did, but you found the thing that was easiest for you to go.
I did every single mission.
But if you notice later on, a lot of this, like especially in a lot of the Ezio games, those were very curated assassination things.
You had to
make these sorts of things happen.
And this may be unpopular. I actually appreciate that because it forced me to do different types of assassination instead of doing the same assassination over and over and over again. You know.
Well, the thing is that you settled on what was easiest for you. You understand?
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying.
But so you say you want freedom, but then some people say they want freedom.
Yeah,
don't say
me. I want it to be, I want it to be like funnel me a specific way so I see different things,
But a lot of people say they want freedom, but at the same time, then they'll just do the stupidest thing, the easiest thing ever, because it's what works best, what they found that works best, rather than kind of trying different things to do the same sort of situation. So it's like a double-edged sword. That's why they kind of went to that sort of aspect where they'll just funnel you down this thing, because you see those amazing cutscenes and stuff, and it's like, hey, wait, how come I can't do that? Oh, well, yeah, you can do that, but you decided to shoot a insanity dart from the other side of town to kill the guy.
hey, Brett, I got one for you, man. Elder Scrolls. You've told me about this shit many times, how you used to be able to do way more shit in the other ones, and now in Skyrim, the most accessible one, you can't do as much as you were able to.
Yeah, that's not even subjective. That's object. Like, you used to wear, like your armor was like shoulders and arms and gloves and chest and pants and boots. And the next game it was kind of like, oh, well, here's your shoulders and your gloves and your elbows kind of put into one. And here's your chest piece and here's your pants and here's your boots. And then the latest iteration, it's like, well, here's your clothes. Have fun picking out shoes and gloves. It's just in the next game, it's probably just gonna be like, here's a whole armor set. Like you're losing the ability to customize. I went apeshit when I played Absolver, and I was like, I get to choose elbow pads and gloves and shoulder pads and a chest piece and a chest armor. Like, holy shit, this is way more slots than I'm used to.
That's the thing, that with success comes simplification. to mm-hmm. try to keep, you know, like, you know, even with Mass Effect, you go from Mass Effect 1 to Mass Effect 2 and then to Mass Effect 3, they kept on taking away aspects of the game.
Yeah.
You know, right. Like people were like, you know, but the thing is that one of the complaints about the first Mass Effect was that the item, you know, your item menu. So what they did was they just said, all right, we're cutting all that down. So, you know, so you don't have much of an item menu to deal with anymore. And then further on from that. So it's like, it is definitely true that that sort of stuff happens because they're trying, they're not only trying to keep the players that, you know, play the original ones, but also trying to attract new players who may not be as patient to go through items and, you know, picking, even you said it, Tony, like, you know, for the most part, you don't give a shit about the armor. You just is this one stronger than the other?
Yep.
That's all right.
It.
Whatever.
Yeah. It's like, oh, this, I have more hit points. I'll pick that one. Does it look ugly? I don't care. It takes more damage.
That was the whole thing with Destiny, right? And Destiny 2. I mean, you go through armor so quickly. What's the point of putting any kind of customization? Yeah,
there's
on
no
it?
Point. There's no point at all.
Yeah, there's no point. You're just going to swap it out.
Exactly. All right. Let's move on here to the next question. This is a very interesting one, too. Do you think cell phone manufacturers will create docking stations similar to the Switch? If so, do you think it could lead to cell phones becoming the primary hardware for TV-based gaming and or perhaps desktop computing?
Here's the funny thing about it. Those sorts of things exist. A dock station like the Switch's one does actually exist.
For phones? Well, like Chromecast.
Okay,
yeah, Chromecast.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Even Apple TV has something very similar.
It hasn't replaced anything. Yeah, the answer would be no. Then it's already.
I think the other thing is that also I would keep using the word zeitgeist, but yes, it also has to be something within the zeitgeist of our world.
We're gonna rename the show Zeitgeist next week.
Man. We're gonna call it Zeitgeist. But yeah, it has to be also something like it's like how certain features don't exist to Apple people until it's on an Apple phone. You know, like Google phones have had these certain features for years, and then all of a sudden Apple gets in. They're like, oh my God, you've revolutionized. These are the first time I've ever seen this or heard this before.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
We don't need headphone jacks in our phones. I mean, I'm fine without one.
Fucking headphones.
Don't get me started with that bullshit.
Yeah, I guess we don't need to go on. The answer is no, it hasn't even happened yet.
No, it hasn't had an effect, but who knows? Maybe because of the Switches, that idea has been put out by these guys. Maybe there's something like that. I don't know. I mean, here's the thing. I think also what about those, you know, like that Switch game controller idea? That also is a new idea. That's also a pretty old idea too. You know, where you just two controllers on the side of the thing.
We did it before.
I think there was something like that for Apple and the Google phones.
Oh,
but the thing is that because it was made by some third party mini company and it probably didn't work as great.
There's a third party one out now.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, once one of the well-known guys do something like that, then other people are like, oh, hey, maybe we should do that too. Sure. You know.
Yeah. All right, man. Let's move on here. My man Joel Torres. So his first question is, man, I wish Chris was here for this one because he could actually answer this question because he actually met the man. All right. What is your opinion on Reggie Fils-Aimé? I think he is the worst PR guy for any company, and I wish he would be replaced. Damn. How do you really feel, bro?
I mean, Reggie is, to be honest, he is like a lot of PR people for companies. There are these very polarizing sort of people. You know, even Chris has said it when he talked to him. He talks through you. I've dealt with marketing people for, you know, some different properties I've worked on, and they don't seem like they function in like our world. It's like they're almost in a somewhat different dimension than everything else. So if you think he should be replaced, but to be honest, he'd probably be replaced with something very, very similar to what he is. That's the thing about PR people. They're all like the same pretty much.
There's a reason why he still has his job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not going to change the way they hire PR people. They're like Manny said, these guys could be in the middle of a freaking the sinking Titanic, and they'll still have a smile on their face, spewing out the message, you know. So it's Reggie Fils-Aimé is the least of your trouble. If Chris was here, he'd be like, "Don't trust anything Kimishima says." But yeah, that's.
But I mean, but here's the thing: is you see the flaw in the messaging also between Kimishima, what Kimishima says, and between what Reggie says, because Kimishima is not a marketing guy,
right?
And he, those guys, the guys, you know, the higher up guys, won't exactly say, they won't tell you the things that you want to hear, like a lot of politicians. And I see marketing people a lot like politicians. They tell you the wonderful things that you want to hear, the things you want, you hear things are doing incredibly great. And then you'll find out, oh shit, you know, it's not good. It's not working.
Like Baghdad Bob. Everything is fine. Dude,
marketing people, especially Reggie, are like the golden labs of human beings. Like they just get excited over everything. Like, okay, super excited, super happy over everything. And the same way, like if you found a golden lab, like really excited about something, you're not going to be like, oh my God, what is it? Because it's a fucking golden lab. It's excited over everything. Just treat Reggie the same way and you generally won't be disappointed. It's one of those like, oh, okay.
Major Nelson also has a little bit of that in him, but I think he figured out, like a lot of the Xbox guys figured out, that presenting a more authentic human reaction to things goes a lot better with the fan base than actually just kind of telling you golden lies. You know what I mean? So like, I mean, the thing is that I always say that, you know, Major Nelson, he, when the Xbox brand and Xbox Live started out, he made a very cool attempt of like trying to open the community, which was what
he was. I remember getting that, his podcast, when it wasn't even part of the network.
Yeah.
He definitely
put out that sort of like, Xbox, we are you. We are the gamers. We are you guys out there. And, I feel like that's one of the things that they lost when they decided to go into the one world, when they started to become the media. I even think that Sony's kind of even learned from that too, where you don't see those kind of marketing heads anymore. You see Yoshida, who seems very normal. He doesn't seem like he's like some, upstanding guy. You know, same thing with a lot of the guys, you know, like the guys that handled the Vita, what's his face, your boy?
Gio Corsi, yeah.
Gio Corsi.
He's just a regular dude.
Those guys seem like just regular dudes. And I think that's one of the things that the more adult companies are kind of take advantage of. It was like, we're not people that just stand over you and tell you what you should like. We're just like you, and we want to play the games that you want, even if they may not even be thinking that at the same time. Yeah. But Reggie's Disneyland, and they're going to tell you the magical things on Earth.
The thing with Reggie, to me, he seems very disingenuous. I know that sounds fucked up, but that's just the way it's like. He doesn't seem like a genuine person. You know what I mean? Everything he says is like, dude, I don't believe you. Like, I don't believe that you believe what you're saying right now.
Well, because
very robotic, very artificial, the way he talks to people. Even my man, I know you said Major Nelson, he still comes off as a actual person compared to.
No, he does. And that's what I think that's what the success, one of the success of the Xbox 360 brand and all that stuff was, is that the fact that Major Nelson put out that sort of like, I'm a guy just like you. I play games just like you. You could meet me at this bar on 23rd Street. Remember that, Adam? Just be like, "Oh yeah, I'm gonna be in town. You guys want to hang out?"
And, when they were coming for a Pac-Man Championship tournament that they were having in New York, and I sent them an email. I was like, "Oh, I'd like to go to that. I'm pretty good at Pac-Man." He was like, "Boom, you're on the list." Wow. He sent me an email. He's like, "You got me on the list." I'm like, "Oh, thanks." He was like, "Yeah."
Yeah, and Manny, remember we took that elevator ride with him, and he seemed like genuinely interested in what we thought about the conference and all that.
He was like, he doesn't. But here's the thing: he's a different sort of marketing type of guy, where he's not presenting obviously he's still obviously just like any marketing person, they will present a little bit of a semi truth. You know, they're never going to say, "Oh yeah, we failed there," right in front of your face on a stage. but he does feel very genuine, just like a lot of the Sony people do, even if they're, again, if even if they're just kind of giving you a partial truth. But Reggie will sit there, and even if Nintendo was doing horribly, he will be like, no, we've done all these other great things, and this is just blah, blah, blah. And he's, you know, one thing about Reggie is he's good at twisting your language around and making it seem nice. And making it seem great for Nintendo. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. All right. Let's move on here to the next question. Okay. Do you guys think it was a mistake for Cuphead to not have PS4 and Nintendo Switch version? I guess he's asking, was it a mistake for the studio MDHR to only release it? Here's the thing. The studio is a small studio. It can only probably put it on one system. They probably went with what they felt was best.
You want to hear something, though? Cuphead started on XNA. If you guys don't know what XNA is, that's the Xbox, like, game development thing. They started out on there. So I feel like one of the reasons why they just continued, they started out on there, and then when they went to, Unity?
Yeah, they went to Unity,
They went to Unity. I feel like they're just like, well, you know, we're already started with this Xbox thing. Let's just keep it going with that. Yeah. And who's to say that when Microsoft saw that or the Xbox division saw that, they said, oh, fuck, yeah, you know, exclusive, do it. You know?
Yeah, I don't think it was a matter of being a mistake. Maybe they were just already tied up with Microsoft, so they kept going.
Yeah,
you know?
I don't think it was purely a decision made by them. I think because Microsoft decided to kind of lock it down a little bit, I think that's the whole reason why it's just an exclusive.
Yeah, does Microsoft have exclusivity rights, or is it just they couldn't make it for all of the systems?
You said that's never coming.
Yeah, they're saying it's never coming. So that means that they're using the Microsoft locked it down.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, but hey, you can play Cuphead on Steam. It's okay.
You can play it on Steam. I mean, you know.
Yeah, that might have been a mistake to sign on that line that makes it a forever exclusive. Like, a timed exclusive, absolutely, because I feel like this game would have enough of a cult following to have multiple sales.
Well, here's the thing. It's only a mistake when it doesn't meet the expectations of the studio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you're just imposing your own expectations and calling
it. Here's the thing. Like, these guys did, you know, there's a chance that Cuphead could have totally fucking failed.
Yeah.
And to have that little bit of a boost and being such a small company from a big company like Microsoft, I don't know. I would probably, if I had a studio, I'd probably take that too.
I would too. Yeah,
I mean, we're actually forgetting the fact that it might be the exclusivity that's put this in the spotlight to begin with, because it has been championed by lots of Xbox guys about like, we've got Cuphead, and that gets people talking about it.
Championed by all these dudes that can't even beat the game. Just had to throw that
out there. But here's the thing about it.
Yeah,
it's in the zeitgeist. Here's the thing about it. But now, since they have the stage, they can decide, okay, you know what? I mean, they may not have the rights to Cuphead. You know, I don't know how that sort of works.
I was going to say that Cuphead is never coming to PS4. Cuphead 2? That's a different story.
Yeah. So that there's your op. They already have the stage of putting out this amazing game. Who's to say that Cuphead 2 wouldn't go fully multi-platinum because they had that stage?
Platform. You mean not platinum. Platform.
Had that stage right there.
Yeah, no, you know, you're right about that. And we got a follow-up question that talks about that. So, I mean, none of us think of a mistake. It's just the business, you know?
No, I mean, to be honest, here's the thing. You know, I mean, we keep everybody – there's a couple of guys out there that talk about, like, you know, what is it? Exclusives being – what do they call it?
Anti-consumer. Word of the day.
I don't think that those sorts of things are a bad thing. Regardless, it gets you out there to go and play. If you don't have an Xbox, you can still play it on PC, but it still gives you that, okay, this is what you play on Xbox. And to be honest, if you think about it, how hard the game actually goes with the tradition of the Xbox all the way back to the original, which was the Xbox is where gamers play, like hardcore gamers play.
Yeah, and Cuphead is hardcore as shit. You can't even, Brett, what's that phrase you came up with? Corpse drag? You can't corpse drag your way through that fucking game. You die, you got to go all the way back to the beginning of that level, you know?
Yep.
You need
skill. It actually puts down a barrier that forces you to get better to pass it. And then people are like, oh my God, I feel so awesome and accomplished after I finally got good enough to pass this barrier.
Yep.
Who's ever played Dark Souls goes, yep.
Here's the thing. If you think about it, where, you know, like how you have Sony where they're going with the kind of, you know, big, you know, like, you know, narrative experiences, you know, very kind of Hollywood-ish type of, you know, production and stuff like that. What if Microsoft decided to go the opposite direction? What if Microsoft said every single fucking game, you got to learn your shit and get good at?
This campaign for that. Yeah, we're taking it away, man. We ain't holding your hand no more.
Exactly. We're not the hand-holding console. When you walk down this, you know, when you play our games, we're not going to tell you where the fuck to go.
by the way, a little bit off topic, but still on topic, if Cuphead 2 were to come out on PlayStation, I would still buy it on Xbox because I've already played the first one on Xbox. I want to keep that lineage going. You know what I mean?
It's also kind of that established thing. It's like how like people who bought the Final Fantasy games mostly bought it on the PlayStation consoles, even though it was on the Xbox.
That's right. All right, man. I'm going to move on. Another Cuphead question. And the first question from Black Metal Gamer. All right, so his question is, with Cuphead already selling 1 million copies on Steam, right? We don't know how many it sold on Xbox, so game could be pretty popular. All right, what do you see? Manny, this is a conversation you and I have had. What do you see the studio doing next? DLCs, expansions, a sequel, or a new IP? Now, let's bring the conversation we had privately to public. As we, Manny, have I said, DLCs and expansions will be very tough for this game because you have to animate all new shit. You know?
Yeah, the one thing about Cuphead is that there are very little reused assets in that game.
Yeah,
there's a reason why that game took so long. If you go to any of those, you know, the Contra shoot 'em up levels, none of those things repeats as far as environments and even like enemies that you fight. Each one has their own batch of enemies and things that show up in there. Maybe, you know, the reusing smoke and stuff like that, that does sort of stuff gets redone.
Yeah.
Enemies and all that stuff. So that would mean that for whatever DLC they have to do, it would have to probably be something that they're already been working on.
Yeah, it would have to
be. Because of just, and it would have to, maybe it was something, it'd have to be something that was like a cut level, but it would take a long time to do it.
Yeah,
because again, everything is animated by hand.
I really don't think people appreciate that. It's like they're like, oh yeah, the computer. No, you know, by hand, and they're animating it once, basically 24 frames a second. Right, they have to animate 24 frames for every single second.
Exactly. That's why the animation is so, you know, smooth. But you know, it's because it took a key animator and maybe a team of cleanup animators and in between animators to get that game to look the way it was. They are doing the equivalent of a Disney film or more than a Disney film in the game.
I love how we're talking about this game, but we have to talk about it as an actual animation project because it is that.
It is an animation project because we're talking about animators. We're talking about background painters.
Yeah, Manny, I have to quickly tell you because it's a little bit of a misnomer. Shanathi said Cuphead is running at 60. Yes, the backgrounds and everything is 60
frames. The background, the
actual animations themselves are 24 frames.
They're 24 frames a second.
Yeah.
The game that is also consistent with a lot, you know. Yeah, it's the game runs at 60, but the actual animations of the characters are all running at 24. Just like how Guilty Gears runs at 60 frames per second, but the character animation all runs at 30, runs not at 30, runs at 15 to 24.
Yeah, exactly.
Depending.
Yeah, depending. Yeah, because it's not, listen, they're not animating 60 frames per second in this game. That's not how it works, you know. But with that said, I do believe we will get a Cuphead sequel eventually because this game's doing so well. Sequels in the hand, in the cards, but at the same time, you're going to have to animate a whole bunch of new shit. You can't reuse, like you said, Cuphead, you could maybe reuse them, but other than that, you're going to have to redo everything from scratch.
Yeah, like Cuphead and Mugman are essentially, you know, you can reuse both of those assets, like his head and the bodies and, you know, them snapping and shooting and all that, the little effects and things. But that would mean you'd have, you remember, you had, was it 13 bosses that you have in that game?
19 bosses.
19 unique animated bosses with all of their little dealies, you know, little creatures or whatever enemies that they create, and all this other stuff has to be totally redone and done for another one.
And they have the platforming levels.
The platforming levels
and the plane levels.
Yep, it's a lot of shit in there, and all of it is unique. All of it. None of it is reused in the game. Even the music is different for every single boss, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy, man. So yeah,
they definitely put, you know, as long as Cuphead took to make, they definitely put all of it into what you see on the screen, or a lot of it.
Most impressive game released this year, just in terms of like production and shit. Nothing's topping that. You know?
And the thing is, it's in a way a double throwback, because it's a throwback to those games from the 90s, like Aladdin and Earthworm Jim. Those games are really nicely animated platforms and stuff, but just taken to that nth level, actually going for full on like style, like a throwback style.
This is what we've dreamed about when we were kids. We wanted to see an animated 2D game like that, and we finally got it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the sad part of it is why did these sorts of games disappear? You know, I mean, I granted it 3D kind of fell by the wayside, but I feel like people could have still done these sorts of things even back in those days.
Yeah, but remember the whole, even with Ken Kutaragi, it's like, we don't want any 2D games. It's all 3D. That's where the industry went, you know?
Yeah.
And we're just now getting back to 2D games.
It feels like people are just rediscovering that games can take different shapes.
Yeah, very interesting, man. But yeah, don't expect any DLCs or expansions. I'm gonna think they're just gonna go for a sequel. They're not gonna bother any of that.
Yeah, I think they're just gonna spend if out of any of it, I think all of it's gonna just go toward Cuphead 2.
Yeah,
and not be able to now afford a bigger team too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they can afford a bigger team.
If DLC's coming, they're already working on it, or they've been working on it, you know. But yeah, don't expect anything like an expansion. It's gonna be a full new game, you know. Yes, Jossie. Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah.
All right. This is another interesting question. How many sequels do you think a franchise should have that is just right, the right amount versus when it's too many damn games? Basically, what is the proper amount of numbered sequels in your opinion? My opinion, how many, you know, you can make as many sequels as you want as long as the games are good. When it's trash, then stop making them. I don't like that. You should stop at 8 and that's it. Never more than 8. It's like, no, if you keep producing good games, keep on making them. But if the quality starts dipping, then take a break and then come back. But I don't think there should be like a hard limit on, you know, sequels. That's kind of silly, you know?
Yeah, I mean, because I always go with the 3 in general. Usually 3 is like the magic number. Like 3 movies and three games, but 3 books. I mean,
3 trilogies.
I feel like those are like the magic numbers, because I feel like once you start hitting past that stuff, we start going on borrowed time. You know what I mean?
It's like, I mean,
but do you feel there should be a hard number for it?
I feel like it's three.
Go ahead, Brett.
I just want to throw a couple things in there. In addition to what Manny said, like 3 is a perfect number for a story. Most stories are also told in 3 acts. And so you can have, essentially an overarching story that's made of 3 stories with 3 acts apiece, but each story acting as an act of your overall story. And it gets infinitely more complicated like that, because, you know, your overarching story has to have, you know, your beginning, your conflict, your resolution. You generally want to follow the hero's journey through all 3 stories as well as the overarching narrative theme. So I would say then that, given that idea, like, you can do trilogies. I would even say you can get up to 3 trilogies before you have to just start saying, like Forgotten Realms did, where like this is just a blank game, or like Final Fantasy did, where it's not really tied anymore. It's just under the banner of this. I think 3 is the magic number. I think 9 is the limit before you need to just start saying this is a franchise and not a sequel.
What about games like Final Fantasy, where each game it's its own thing, or games like Mario and Mega Man, which don't really have too many stories? It's just they've just a shit ton of them.
What again, those jump straight into franchises. They're not sequels to a game. They're just a franchise by themselves.
Okay, so how many games should be in a franchise then? Should there be a
limit? I think you could have an unlimited number of games and franchises as long as they continue to be good. That's yes. where I think mm-hmm. like the, yeah. the link that's between where you and Manny yeah. come up is.
Yeah,
that's so like yeah, like a story can last for essentially three installments, whether it be a movie, a book, or a video game. An overarching narrative can last for three stories. And then and this extends to like books and movies too. Like if you get to nine of a movie, you need to stop with those characters and focus on a new set of characters and just make it a different story in that world. Like it is a franchise. And this even goes for like seasons of TV shows. Like you hit a point in which you're like, all right, we have saturated these characters to a certain point. We can still tell stories in this world, but we need to leave these characters and move on.
All right. Let me tackle the question from that direction. Yeah. If it's a story based game. Yeah. Trilogies. You could do that. Like you can't have like a 6-part story. It's a little bit kind of stupid. Assassin's Creed got a little diluted. Like where's Desmond? You know, they should have ended that shit right
there. He died.
Yeah, but, you know, but you know, but they kept going after that. It's like, why are we still going with this shit?
So, I wanted to play the Desmond.
I agree with you guys. Three for a story based thing, but if it's like an action game, like Mega Man, do as many as you want, as long as they're good. You know,
The Mega Man games are never on. They're kind of made like animated TV shows, where it's like a lot of like old animated TV shows, where like they're in the same world. But they don't actually literally connect. It's just another adventure.
Pretty much. Carlos, what do you think?
I guess if people are putting the whole thing, if a franchise keeps getting good, then there shouldn't be a limit. Then I'll apply that to the sequel stuff too. Because, I mean, we wouldn't have gotten Uncharted 4 in that case. And I think since I just recently beat it, I thought Uncharted 4 was like the second best game in the whole series.
Yeah, I definitely liked it more than 3. So yeah,
I liked it more than 3.
Yeah, I liked it more than 3 and 1.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So I guess for me, it just depends on the quality. If like a story like Assassin's Creed gets oversaturated, where there really is no need to keep going with the same story, then it's kind of pointless.
That's why I'm glad they redid God of War. Essentially, it's like this and that old shit got tired already. It's played out, you know.
Yeah, because if you think about it, it's a sequel.
Yeah,
I don't feel like God of War got played out.
Go play Ascension, please.
Well, here's the thing. I feel like whatever they did with Ascension fucked the franchise over.
Yeah, but don't you even with the PSP games, as much as I love those, I still felt like, okay, guys, we're just doing the same thing now.
I thought the PS3 game was like the end level of that.
Yeah.
The PS3 game, God of War 3, I think that was the end level. And I could have, if it had that quality of storytelling as well as gameplay, I think it could have done. I think God of War Ascension could have done it.
But the story wasn't really good. Like the best thing about God of War to me is the action, the enemies, the bosses. Those, like, does anybody really like follow the continuity of the story of God?
I do. I thought the story is the thing that hooked me the most. You know, I love
the first one. I do think that the first one has the best of the stories.
Yeah,
sure. I agree with that.
But I do feel like they kind of tried to recapture that just a little bit in the third one.
Yeah.
But, you know, like God of War 2 is like no rules pasta. It's like, hey, we're here. I'm the angry guy.
The Island of Time. It's like, that's not even Island real great. Get the fuck out of here. You know? Yeah, anyway, Adam, what do you think about numbered sequels? Should there be a limit or?
Yeah. I mean, just change things up. I mean, look what's happening with Star Wars right now. Constantly. I think a lot of people are getting burnt out, and so they're doing these spin-offs, you know.
What about FIFA, son?
FIFA, that's not even, that's just, that's just every year. That's just nonstop. I mean, until the sport actually dies and disappears, we'll always get a FIFA.
No, but it's your rules.
Yeah.
The question is asking you what you would do.
Yeah, would you do? Yeah.
Well, what I do? If it was,
you could only have X amount of games. Would you make that a
hard X amount of games? No, I wouldn't. Because, I mean, if people like it, there's always going to be people that want to pay for it. And there's always going to be people that want to keep working on it. I mean, people grow up. We grow up. You try something new. You experiment, whether it's a game or a movie. You're like, wow, that was great. Now I work in that field. Now I want to make my version. You can't tell them, nope, can't be done. It was already done years ago.
Because if you think about it, FIFA, those are sequel games because I've been playing Cristiano Ronaldo. And I've been playing Cristiano Ronaldo in FIFA for 10 years.
Yeah, until he retires, but he'll still go on. And he'll
But you'll still have connecting dots.
Like, yeah, you're going to have the Ronaldo.
I don't see it that way because it's just because it's based off of
sport. The Ronaldo saga, right, Carlos?
The Ronaldo saga, man.
Unless there is no more sport, then it won't continue anymore.
Yeah, but you still have the same teams.
Yeah, sometimes. Some teams get relegated and then they go down.
Yeah, but FIFA, you can still play the lower level teams in FIFA.
Yeah, but the teams are different. The teams change in all the divisions except the MLS. Well, they expand in MLS, but all the other ones, you know, the three-tier teams at the bottom for the Serie A, the Bundesliga, all of them, they just get relegated.
Yeah, but it's only one team per year, and it's mostly always the same.
Three teams.
Not in the Premier.
Yeah, Premier is bottom three teams get relegated.
Oh, shit. But it's still you get my point, right? Like it's still
sport, but I can't see it that way because they're not telling a story. They add those stories, but it's still people play the game just to play what they see on TV. It's as opposed like the Uncharted, that's a new story. There's nothing out there like that. There's not a real Nathan Drake. You know, there's real Cristiano Ronaldo.
Hold up. We're stopping the podcast right now. I'm just joking. All right, let's move on, man. Last two questions from my man All Day Digital. So I actually had to ask him to expand on this question because originally, as he stated, it was like, wait, what? Okay, so he goes, after reading a recent interview with Shannon Loftus, who, you know, works for Microsoft, she seemed quite clueless. She was asked, what is Xbox One's Halo or Gears of War equivalent? And she said ReCore and Quantum Break were a phenomenon. She is in charge of first-party games and publishing third-party. With Shannon not knowing what the killer app is, do you feel Microsoft's first-party has any hope of producing killer apps under her charge? Do you think Microsoft would be better off replacing her?
Number one, you're asking a person who works at Microsoft what the best game was. That is a no-win question, for one.
It's going to be disingenuous all the time.
Going to be disingenuous all the time. They are always going to say the things, the hot things that they created pretty recently.
Yeah. This is just like if you go to any your favorite artist, I don't care who it is, ask them what their favorite album is from their catalog. They'll always pick the most recent one.
Yeah, they're always going to pick the most recent one because it also, in a sideways sort of way, can attribute itself to sales.
Yeah, exactly. So she had to say that. So
he had to say. Yeah, never going to say. Here's the thing. Wait a generation and ask her that same question, and then she will say the actual answer of what she thinks is the Halo of the Xbox One.
But I also don't think she should be like fired or anything. I don't think she did anything.
No, she knows just as much as everybody what that killer thing is for the Xbox One. But she's not going to say it because it's not what is the big first party thing.
Yeah,
or the most recent first party thing.
Yeah, I mean the thing is when you follow gaming and stuff, you got to understand, you got to learn PR speak. You know, this is just how they operate. So no, I'm not going to take that against her in this case. She had to say, she had to give the obvious answer, which is the most recent shit, you know?
Yeah. What do you think is great? The new shit.
Of course. It's the greatest thing you've ever done, you know?
It's the greatest. Yeah. That's why you hear crazy shit like that's coming from Microsoft. Like, this is the greatest year for gaming ever on the Microsoft console.
And then really? The people's eyebrow goes up. It's like, really? Yeah,
really?
They all say it. Everybody has the best new phone out. Everybody has the best new TV. Nothing has ever looked better besides this TV. You know what I mean? It's just how they sell. Best new car, best SUV, you know.
Exactly. Everywhere. This is the greatest iPhone we have created.
We got to get Peter Molyneux to sell this shit. It is the greatest thing ever. All right. And the final question of the very interesting one, too. What was the first game you ever played with your parents or parent?
I can answer it first because it's pretty. I've never played a video game with my parents.
There's my answer. The thing is, back in my day, at least, I don't know how it is like more current generations. It was uncool to play games with the adults because adults look stupid playing games. They're always like flailing around. That's why me and my friends, we had that rule. It's like, no, when you play games, you you got to compose yourself. You don't move your shit around like that. Like, my mom would play the Nintendo and stuff, but I never played with her. It's like, you don't play with adults. That's a weird thing to do, you know?
My mom never played, but she used to watch. She used to like to watch me play games, you know, like Sonic and Super Mario Brothers and stuff. Yeah, so she knew the stuff as she saw and stuff, and she liked that. My father, on the other hand, he's always been kind of a techie kind of guy. So the first games that I played with my father, and usually at arcades, like we played arcade games together, and my dad loved Tekken, like the Tekken, Tekken 1, 2, and 3. Like, he used to love fucking Eddie Gordo. And he's damn good in it too.
What about Adam? What about you, man?
Oh man, probably Mario. I got my Nintendo, and I remember my mom came in and she saw me playing. She was like, "All right, what do I have to do? What do I press?"
The hilarious thing about it is that the way you said that is exactly how your mom sounds. It's
That's it. You know, but my dad was big into it also. He used to take me to arcades and stuff, and he would play a lot of like Pac-Man and things like that. He liked the whole gaming thing.
I also feel like because your father also worked at an electronics store, that he also had like a really big interest in that sort of stuff as well. Like knowing them, you know, knowing
he would tell me, he was like, "All right, this is selling well. What is it? It's this guy in this elevator. It was elevator action."
Mm-hmm.
He told me that. He was like, "Everyone wants this." And this, but there was really no way to find out besides Nintendo Power. So I'm like, "Oh, I think I played this in the arcade. Okay, I want that one."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What about you, Brett?
My dad and I used to play Mario together all the time, and he played a lot of arcade games with me. We played the Simpsons game every time we found one, but there was a point, I think it was after Super Mario World, I started playing some other Super Nintendo games, and he was just like, "All right, this is getting complicated for me. There's way more buttons on this controller. I think I'm done."
That's what my father said later on in the later Tekken games. Like in the later fighting games and stuff, he's like, it's got too much buttons and stuff. I think I'll pass it.
You go ahead, man.
My mom detested video games.
Oh shit!
She said that would be like, that would lead me to Crazy Town and like make my grades worse and stuff. So she kind of detested it to a point. So she would never like think of joining like a gaming session or anything like that.
My mom used to play, you know, the Nintendo too, but again, like I would always kind of watch her because it's like she would like yank the machine out and shit, you know, because remember there were cords back then, and she was always flailing around and stuff, so it's like I would always be on the side like is she gonna fuck this up? Do I have to run in there and save the console? You know,
was gaming before I was gaming.
Oh, nice. Yeah, my father, and I'm sure Adam's father too. There, my dad had an Atari or something back in the day. Oh, you know, it's funny. Me and Adam's uncle is actually a huge fucking gamer, Richard.
Oh, Richard, yeah, Richard's big time.
Our uncle Richard is a huge
Call of Duty and all of those games. And guys, like in the 60s.
Yeah. He still plays, and he has a damn good trophy list too. He goes through those games, like he finishes them. So,
By the way, I like what Barry Burton says. He goes, "The era of playing console games with your parents didn't start until the Wii was released with grandma and shit." You know,
I love the little man.
And actually playing like this is actually viable now. Playing like a crazy person, swinging your arms around, that actually became viable. You know.
But here's the hilarious thing. We are now living in the age where all of us, you know, we're in the age bracket that people our age have kids.
Yes.
That are in maybe in their 20s, right?
No, or not in their 20s, bro.
Not in their 20s. Not in their 20s. But maybe like in their,
early teens. Yeah, yeah.
Early teens. So obviously nowadays people are playing with their parents.
Yeah.
I played with my daughter. I got a 3DS and we played Mario Kart, and that blew her mind. The fact that I can jump in her game. And then we've been playing together in Super Mario Brothers 2.
Yeah, there you go.
So, yeah.
Yeah, by the way,
I know Colby plays with his daughter.
Yeah, see?
Yes. You know.
And she's a teenager, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, there you go. By the way, quick funny story about that. Last summer, or it was 2 summers ago, whatever. So my sister left me with her niece for the summer, right? And I would take her out and stuff. People were like, yo, Tony, man, when you have a kid, son? I get her because obviously it's my sister's daughter. She looks like me, right? And I'm like, she's not my kid. What are you talking about? And then in my mind, I'm like, I'm not old enough to have a teenage kid. I'm like, Tony, your sister's, your sister's younger than you, bro. Damn it, I am old enough to have a teenage kid. It's crazy. Because she was like 14 at the time. I was 36. So, that works. You know, and here's the thing. Not only have a kid, but have a kid at a responsible age. Like, if I was 36 having a 14-year-old kid, that means I would have already finished college and had a job and had enough time to actually have a kid responsibly. You know what I mean? It's crazy, man. I forget that sometimes.
I think the hilarious thing is that how much your sister's kids look like they look like you. You know what I mean?
Hey, family,
like,
man.
Your nephew totally looks like a clone of you. At least from when I used to see pictures of him.
Yeah,
before.
My man Junior, right? He's in the chat sometimes. This dude's like 16, 17, man. He was playing games with me when I was like in my early 20s. This shit is crazy. You know?
Yeah.
All right, man. So that's going to do it for the show. I don't really have any outro shit here, so I'm just going to end it. All right. So thank you for watching and listening. Leave us the questions in the comment section of this episode here or on the Coalition or answer them on next week's show. Subscribe to Throw It Down on SoundCloud, iTunes, and YouTube. Follow us on Twitch, Mixer, Twitter, Facebook at Throw It Down Show. We got a lot of shit in there. Links for all that shit are down there as always, man. So once again, our show is Tony Polanco. And this week I was joined by Emilio Lopez.
This week? What do you mean, like I'm gone?
Yeah, man.
Nah, man, I'm here for the most part. I'll see you later, guys.
Carlos Romero.
Peace out.
Brett Murdoch.
See you, everybody.
And Adam Van.
Later, people.